having bad breath. Now is the time for you to be humble. Say that you are hard to get along with, and you are so sorry for being so irrational, but you simply can't help yourself. The girlfriends believe that you should do your best to avoid offending anyone who might be called on later to save your life. Trust us. Later on, when you are about to push, the chances are good that you will offend or insult several people. Just make sure that your nurse is someone you can rely on and trust. You know, like the ultimate girlfriend. Soon after you have changed into hospital garb, you will have a fetal monitor strapped around your belly like a belt. This is fun because it communicates your contractions to a machine beside your bed and shows the baby's heartbeat. Please be warned that changing positions, either yours or the baby's, can interfere with the monitor's ability to detect the heartbeat. This does not mean that anything is wrong with the baby. It just means that your belt has to be adjusted. You will probably have an IV needle placed in the back of your hand or forearm and connected to a bottle of saline solution. The rationale is that the saline keeps you from becoming dehydrated and that if you need any other medications quickly, the doctors already have a tap in place. Some of my girlfriends made a real fuss over the IV, as if only a sadist would add to a laboring woman's discomfort by sticking her with a big needle. Others, such as myself, found labor and impending birth to be so overwhelming that I barely noticed it. Hurry up and wait. After the initial excitement of settling in and hooking up, you will probably not have much to do. Especially with first babies, labor tends to go on for hours, punctuated by a doctor or your new best friend, your nurse, occasionally reaching inside you to report how dilated you are, or are not. If you're not too uncomfortable, try to rest because pushing a baby out is a surprisingly athletic feat and you will need your strength. Now is a good time for your girlfriends to drop by or to phone them because you might be a little bored, at least when you're not having a contraction. Nearly every one of my girlfriends was shocked by how long and how hard the contractions have to be to get your cervix dilated enough for a baby to come out. It is so common for a girlfriend to labor for 6 hours and endure contractions that make her see stars, then be told she's only 4 centimeters dilated. It feels as if you're running a race where they keep moving back the finish line, which can really rock a woman's ability to cope. You may also be stricken by the fear that you are not physically strong or athletic enough to give birth after all. Keep in mind what I told you earlier. This is not a fitness test, and you will manage to get that baby out, even if someone has to sit on your stomach to help you push. You might think to yourself, I can take this pain if someone will promise to me that it will all be over in 2 hours. That's the problem. No one will know how much longer your labor will last, and that can be disheartening. Try not to focus on the labor at this point, but on the prize at the end of the race, a precious baby placed in your trembling arms. Remember, to paraphrase Annie, the son and the baby will come out tomorrow. At the latest. How much does labor hurt? Early labor is like the worst case of menstrual cramps you can imagine, but with more total body involvement. A good contraction is so overwhelming that you will be unable to do anything else but contract. Not only will you not be able to talk, you will not be that crazy about listening either. Several of my laboring girlfriends have yelled "shut up" to their husbands and other visitors because their conversation irritated them during a contraction. As labor progresses, it can take on a variety of personalities. You may have heard of someone's traumatic back labor, for example, when the baby pressed against the mother's spine. Other women describe contractions that came so close together, they didn't have time to prepare for the next one. Generally, however, when women talk about the pain of labor, they're referring as much to the marathon of pain as its intensity. 1 hour of hitting yourself with a hammer may hurt a lot, but 15 hours of it will certainly make you delirious. We all agree that the hardest part is not having any idea how long you will have to bear up. The fear that the pain might continue indefinitely is what usually brings down even the strongest of us. We would give anything if only someone could guarantee that there were only 70 minutes left, like on the Stairmaster. The other thing that can break down during a laboring woman's control is nausea. I bet no one ever told you about that, right? Well, girlfriends, it is extremely common for laboring women to feel sick and throw up, especially as they near that final part of labor called transition. Think of this as one more way that nature has of cleaning you out in preparation for birth. Do not think of it as abnormal or an imposition on anyone, except you, that is. Simply tell the nurse or nearest person that you are sick, and you will be stunned at how quickly a basin or a towel appears under your chin. Think of vomiting as a respite of sorts, an interruption of our regular programming that will leave you feeling lighter and better. Pushing. I have a girlfriend, a professional woman of intellect and experience, who actually told me she didn't realize that you have to push to get a baby out. She thought the contractions would be hard enough to move the baby down the birth canal without any extra work on her part. Boy, was she surprised. Pushing is real physical work, and it can take anywhere from a few minutes to several hours. Once you are dilated and fully effaced, a nurse will stand at your head and a doctor will stand in the catcher's position, and they will coach you through this athletic feat. On each contraction, you will grab your knees or thighs with your hands in an effort to fold up tight and make as little room for the baby in your lap as possible. On the assumption that this won't be enough to give him the hint, you will also push down with every muscle between your chest and your knees. The sensation that will immediately come to mind is that of making a bowel movement. Congratulations! You're doing it, right? You can really be sure of your technique if your face is squeezed so tight that you feel as if you were giving yourself crow's feet all the way to the back of your scalp. Don't worry for 1 second if you feel as if the baby were coming out of the wrong hole. At a time like this, any hole will do. Besides, he or she probably has a better sense of direction than you think. If you don't take any pain relief, either because you don't want it or because your doctor has determined that the baby is coming too fast for it, it will be of much use. The most terrifying moment of your life comes when you are told it's time to push. As much as nature is already making you feel like bearing down, you are way too smart to think that moving that baby out of your vagina isn't going to hurt. Imagine a burning sensation involving your entire crotch area, combined with stretching that makes you think your hips will break, or better yet, don't. Now catch your breath, because I'm going to tell you the one and only way to make this pain subside. Push right through the pain as hard as you can. That's right. Do the opposite of what your mind is telling you to do, which is to lie still and whimper. This will take a tremendous amount of courage on your part, but I promise that it will help. Either it will activate a pain-numbing mechanism that nature provides when the baby's head pushes through the cervix, or it will simply get the whole ordeal over with sooner rather than later. One thing I can tell you for certain, lying there and repeating, I changed my mind, I don't want a baby, will provide absolutely no relief. Now is finally the time when your husband can really join in and help. He can push you into a sitting position with each contraction to help you bear down, or he can help you and the nurse hold your legs in the up and ready position. You'll resemble a frog, by the way. Then again, helping you may interfere with his camera duties, so you'll have to delegate the various responsibilities. The epidural. The most common method of pain relief for a laboring woman is the epidural, a combination of drugs released into the fluid surrounding your spinal cord through a needle in your lower back. As you are reading this description, you are probably so alarmed that you are convinced you would rather go through labor sober than to have anybody sticking needles into your spine. After a few hours of hard labor, however, you will probably welcome an epidural, even if it was administered through your eyeballs. An anesthesiologist must administer an epidural. The good part about this is that no amateurs will be puncturing your spine and crippling you for life. The bad part is that not all hospitals have anesthesiologists on duty 24 hours a day, so there may not be one around when you want one. My girlfriend Chris decided at the last minute that she didn't want to do an unmedicated delivery of her third child. She had gone the frontier woman route with her previous two babies, and she had nothing left to prove to anyone. She asked her doctor to call an anesthesiologist to give her an epidural. Unfortunately, he was at home asleep, and by the time he got to the hospital, Chris was holding baby number 3 in her exhausted arms. The lesson here is that if there is even a remote chance that you will want an epidural, tell your doctor several times during your pregnancy and remind him or her when you call announcing that you are in labor. Then say it again, over and over, to anyone in scrubs from the minute you arrive in the hospital until you feel that tap in your back. When given an epidural, you would either roll over on your side or sit on the side of the bed with the nurse bracing you for support. The doctor will have you curl up in a ball as best as you can under the circumstances. This separates your spine so that they can get to the magic spot. Chances are that you will have a contraction sometime during the procedure, but they will be patient and wait until you can lie completely still. Then you will be given a shot of Novocaine in your back. Moments later, the doctor will put a thin shunt into your back and tape it in place. You may be surprised to learn that an epidural is like an IV, in that it remains in your back during the rest of labor and delivery. That way, the anesthesiologist can monitor your pain level and administer more or less of the drug accordingly. You can lie on the shunt and roll around, and you won't feel or disturb it. You will probably feel the sensation of an electrical shock running through your legs when the epidural is first activated. Don't let this frighten you. It is momentary and completely normal, and will not, in retrospect, even register on your painometer. After the zap is passed, the relief is almost immediate. You will be infinitely grateful and astonished when you see another contraction registering on the graph paper from the monitor beside your bed, while you feel nothing more than pressure. This is generally when pregnant women get their personality back. They become nice and loving to their husbands and chatty with their nurses and girlfriends. Even better, many of them are able to take a nap. Wonderful as an epidural can be, it has a couple of little drawbacks. The most immediate one is that it tends to slow down productive labor. The other is that you may be so numb from the waist down that you cannot push hard enough to get the baby out. For this second reason, the anesthesiologist may turn down the epidural when it is time to push, so that you can be of some assistance at this critical juncture. Or you can try what my girlfriend Janice did. She swore on the life of her husband that she would find a way to push without feeling if they would just promise not to turn down her epidural. The doctor agreed to give it a try, and Janice wheeled that little girl out through sheer terror. Pitocin. You might be dilating at a centimeter an hour, get an epidural, and then fail to dilate any more for quite some time. This is where the drug Pitocin might be administered. Pitocin is dripped into your system through the IV in your hand, so no new puncturing is required. The drug is also used to induce labor when the doctor and mother mutually decide that the baby has overstayed its welcome. It usually brings on contractions that are hard and constant, so hard and constant that women who have bravely been laboring without pain medication scream for the epidural if they've been given Pitocin. Any notions of Lamaze breathing through these contractions will usually result in hyperventilation and tremendous frustration. But hey, you can take my word for it or decide for yourself when the occasion presents itself. An alternate route. All the Pitocin and laboring in the world just may not result in your cervix opening up enough for the baby to come out. You are probably a dish rag at this point, and even your baby may be showing signs of fatigue. Then comes the suggestion that you have dreaded for 9-10 months. Maybe we should consider a C-section. This suggestion is almost universally met with great disappointment and alarm, usually manifested in a sobbing fit. Suddenly, your dreams of childbirth are shattered. Your hopes of meeting the physical challenge and emerging victorious are shot. The disappointment and feeling of failure are almost always more upsetting to women than the prospect of having their stomach cut open with a knife. I have girlfriends who, years after their C-sections, still feel robbed of one of life's great experiences, who still think that if they had been allowed to labor just a little longer, the baby would have been born vaginally. Please don't start restricting yourself now with expectations and rules about what denotes a successful delivery and what denotes a failure. A delivery that results in a healthy mother and baby is a gift from God, no matter how that delivery was achieved. Period. Childbirth is not like a visit to a spa. It is not designed for your personal enjoyment and fulfillment. It is not an opportunity to demonstrate your abilities or fitness. It is designed to perpetuate the species and nothing more. If you and the doctor determine that you are going to have a C-section, your epidural will be turned up. If you don't have an epidural in place, you will immediately be given one. Or if time is critical, you will be put to sleep with general anesthesia or given a spinal block. I've had a C-section with an epidural, and the sensation I remember most was all this jostling about. I felt no pain, but I did feel as if I were being moved around inside and out. And I was surprised at how long it took to get the baby out. I am sure they can do it faster if they have to, but a leisurely C-section consists of methodical incisions through each individual layer between the outside world and your baby. Not one deep cut right to the baby. Once the baby is delivered and its umbilical cord is clamped off, you will probably be given some long-lasting painkiller, such as morphine. The rest is euphoria, at least until the morphine wears off. Birth. Since I am a mature mother, read older, I've had genetic tests that revealed, among other things, the sex of my baby. Some women choose not to have their doctors tell them this information because they want to be surprised at birth. I still find everything about giving birth surprising or shocking, and I don't need to add one more thing. Besides, I like to start decorating the nursery as soon as possible, so I have always known that whether I was having a boy or a girl. You might not know, however, and here's your big moment. With that last exhausted push comes the announcement, "It's a boy," or "It's a girl." Make sure you hear the definitive statement from a medical person, because fathers are notorious for seeing the umbilical cord and mistaking it for a penis. Only trust those people who have their anatomy knowledge certified by a medical degree. I have no words to adequately describe the feeling of seeing your baby the moment it emerges from your body. Even if you are exhausted and disoriented from labor and medication, looking at the creature who has been living inside you all this time will be the closest thing to seeing God that life can provide, without the help of a burning bush or a parting sea. In all your imaginings, this is probably where your movie ended, with your baby being put into your arms and your husband gazing lovingly into each other's eyes, the music swelling and the credits starting to roll. Sorry to be the one to tell you, but that is not exactly how it goes in real life. If you have had a vaginal birth, the baby might be placed on your belly for warmth while the doctor clamps the umbilical cord and someone, perhaps your baby's daddy, cuts it. Then you still have some pushing to do, because the placenta has to come out too. If you had a C-section, they take the placenta out for you, so lie back and relax. After you've pushed the placenta and a lot of other bloody, gunky stuff that can look alarming, but is perfectly normal, the doctor will reach inside you to see if anything is left that might cause infection. This part is not fun, and it usually comes as a surprise to a new mother who wants to be left in peace after what she has just endured. Breathe deeply for this part, or ask the doctor to turn up the epidural. Then comes the stitching. Chances are, if you had a vaginal birth, and it is your first, your doctor performed an episiotomy before the baby emerged. That means he or she made a slit in your stretching skin to make more room for the baby to come out. The justification for this is that if the cut weren't made, the baby would tear you anyway, and it's theoretically easier to stitch up a clean slit than a ragged tear. My experience was that I ended up with episiotomies and tears, so I had more stitches than Frankenstein's monster. The stitching part usually doesn't hurt, but it does take a while. So while your husband and the nurse are having fun with your baby, you are lying with your knees wide open and your precious parts being sewn back together. Love at first sight. You may take one look at your new baby and sob with the depth of love and devotion you immediately feel. Or you may take a look to make sure it is whole and healthy, then secretly hope that some professionally trained person takes it away somewhere. This does not mean that you will not love your baby as much as the next mother does, or that you have the character of a slug, so take it easy on yourself. Birth is traumatic, even under the best of circumstances, and you may need a while to allow your emotions to catch up with your new identity. Think of it this way. Even your dearest friend may have taken a while to work her way into your heart, and she didn't give you stretch marks. So why should you feel obliged to fall in love with this little stranger the minute you lay eyes on it? Just know that it will happen, and you will grow to feel a love so fervent that your insides hurt and you can't take a deep breath without its catching. Now what? Your doctor and nurse will leave once they finish putting you back together as best they can. Your baby will be taken to the nursery to be given an injection of vitamin K, weighed and measured, foot and hand printed, and having other such bureaucratic stuff done to it. It will also be evaluated for its alertness, reflexes, strength, and in our family, sense of humor. The result of this evaluation is called your baby's Apgar score. I don't want to say much more about it because tests and evaluations give me performance anxiety. You will be moved from the birthing room to a regular hospital room. During your stay, your time will be spent putting ice packs on your swollen privates, resting as much as possible, learning to nurse and changing diapers, and receiving visitors. You won't realize it for some time, but this enchanted period ends much too soon. In fact, in about 3 months, you will long to check back into the hospital, where your meals, albeit tasteless, are prepared for you, your sheets are cleaned every day, and your baby is taken away by capable professionals whenever you get tired. The girlfriend's advice that you stay in the hospital as long as your insurance allows you to. Even if it's just one more day, that is 24 hours of postponing the inevitable. A lifetime of work and responsibility. Chapter 17, Postpartum Dementia. The Small Potatoes. It really is shocking, but the hospital or birthing center is eventually going to turn over a helpless, fragile, and needful human being to your care. So counting you and your husband, that makes three of you. With less training than you got when you learned to insert your diaphragm, you are expected to go home and raise this baby to adulthood. If you are not frightened at this prospect, then you certainly don't have a vivid imagination. As alone as you may feel at this moment, most of your fears have been experienced by girlfriends since the beginning of the ability of the human animal to be neurotic. And if their words aren't enough to get you started worrying, all you have to do is watch daytime television, because every talk show and news broadcast will be about some child-related disaster. What follows is a list of some of the most common paranoias about mothering. It'll break its neck. We have heard so many times that newborns have no ability to support their own head, that we live in fear of their little noggin jerking out of our careful grasp, snapping off their neck and rolling onto the floor. So far, in all my research, I have never heard of a mother accidentally injuring her baby by letting go of its head. It is true, however, that you should hold your baby with two hands because they frequently jerk their heads unexpectedly and can fall backward out of your grip if you aren't paying attention. The most anxious moments, truly terrifying in the beginning, are when you are dressing or bathing the baby, because a newborn's head feels at least as heavy as the rest of its body parts combined. The companion worry to "I'll break its neck" is "I'll squish its head." The entire top of a newborn's head is soft because the bones of the skull haven't joined together over the top. You will have no problem being gentle with this area, but every one of your girlfriend's little children or your own older kids are guaranteed to pat on it hard with their grimy mitts, or more likely, with a wooden block. Don't wait for the girlfriends to notice and stop their darlings. Just grab away the offending hand and sweetly say, "No, no," through your clenched teeth. Better still, hold your baby out of reach, especially when the danger is another child. As soon as we stop watching the baby, it will stop breathing. Just wait until you see how many times you'll stand beside your sleeping baby and stare at it as if its lungs were only working through the sheer force of your will and concentration. New mothers are terrified of something dreadful happening to their babies while they aren't on watch. If the mother happens to have enjoyed a particularly restful snooze of 3 straight hours, she will fly to the baby in morbid dread that it must have died to allow her to sleep so long. Heaven forbid that the baby is quietly sleeping, because the frantic mother will have to pinch it awake to hear it cry before she can be satisfied that all is well. I will forget I have a baby and leave it somewhere. I have had several vivid dreams in which I put the baby in his car seat and set it on the hood of my car while I dug in the diaper bag for my keys. And then, after finding the keys, I jumped into the car and sped off, leaving the baby sitting on top of the car. One of my girlfriends used to fret that she would take her baby shopping with her and then accidentally leave it in a dressing room, not realizing her mistake until she got home. There are several variations on this theme of failing to care for your baby in the most fundamental ways. My girlfriend Chrissy used to have nightmares that she would drop her baby over a hotel balcony. It would happen in slow motion, and she'd be powerless to stop the sequence, even though she knew how it would turn out. Let me hasten to reassure you that Chrissy's kids are nearly grown now, and obviously the products of truly great parenting. So the dreams were not a sign of a sick mind, but simply the sign of a mother who was afraid of how much she loved and wanted to protect her kids. Okay, and maybe just a pinch of postpartum depression. I'll sleep through a feeding and the baby will starve to death. A startling, at least to me, number of new mothers rely so completely on the feeding schedule that their pediatrician suggests to them that they feel obligated to wake a sleeping baby to make sure it doesn't miss a feeding, as if it will perish without those precious 4 ounces. Babies don't really perilously exist from feeding to feeding. They're meant to be slightly more durable than that. The only time I can think of to wake a sleeping baby to feed it is when you are breastfeeding, and your breasts are threatening to explode if someone doesn't suck the milk out quickly. Remember, the goal is for your baby to learn to sleep all through the night without needing to eat. Relax and be grateful if the baby has skipped the traditional 11 p.m. feeding. He or she will eat enough at the next feeding to make up for it. Wake it during the day if you must, but not at night. Babies usually get one decent stretch, so it is better for everyone concerned if that stretch comes at night, after all the good or at least watchable television shows are over. What if the baby doesn't like me? A lot of girlfriends, particularly those who have had a mother's helper or grandma to help them with the baby for the first few weeks, said that they were worried that their baby liked the caretaker better than them. They said that the babies cried more or were restless when they held them, but calm and sleepy when someone else held them. I can't offer any guarantees for 15 years from now, but at this age, your baby loves you with every ounce of his existence, because you are what stands between it and a difficult world. It may not love you for your wit and charitable deeds, but it will love you as part of itself. There is nothing you have to do to earn this love. It's far more fundamental than that. Your baby has to love you. It's the rules. He might just be reflecting your own nervousness when he fusses. Or more commonly, he is simply expressing his excitement at the meal that awaits him, since you smell like a milk wagon to him. If your baby loves other people in addition to you, don't be selfish. There's plenty to go around. What if I don't like the baby? You will always love your baby, but you may not always like it much. A mother who's been walking the baby up and down the hall for 5 hours without being able to get it to sleep may be close to wanting to sell the little one. If our friends or spouses were as demanding and selfish and oblivious to our personal happiness, we would drop them like hot potatoes. You haven't seen neediness until you have had a baby. This is the Grand Canyon of need. And what do they give you in return? A crooked smile now and then, perhaps a dirty diaper. When you feel a cloud of resentment sinking down around you, ask some benevolent soul, such as your mother or husband or girlfriend, don't you just love your girlfriends, to take the baby somewhere where you can't hear it or see it for an hour or two. The respite will work wonders. Why is my life such a mess? Even the most finicky and organized of us lose all control of our environment when a new baby comes home to live with us. You will wonder, as you step over piles of laundry on the living room floor, how one tiny baby can require so much time and work. Forget writing thank you notes and returning phone calls. You're lucky if you get a shower in. And a miracle worker if you put on clothes that actually match and or clean. Generally, you look crummy. The baby needs something, and you and your partner haven't eaten anything but lean cuisine in 3 weeks. Then your mother-in-law calls to say that Aunt Grace has asked her 5 times whether you got the Pat the Bunny book she sent you, since she still hasn't heard from you. This is the real postpartum depression, not that wimpy little tear fest the books say that you might experience in the hospital after the baby is born. All this, combined with about 2 solid months of sleep deprivation and sore nipples, can really get a girlfriend bummed out and possibly give her a nasty cold. I wish I could give you the secret cure to this condition, but there isn't one. The best advice we can give you is to accept your limitations and accept your friends and family's offers of assistance. Sure, they may drive you crazy or be completely unable to find their way around your kitchen, but let them try, because they are still more capable than you are. Just know that we have all suffered what you are suffering, and we sympathize deeply. This, too, shall pass, just more slowly than seems humane. I hate nursing. It is politically correct these days to breastfeed our infants. The justifications are numerous and reverently listed in every book on pregnancy. The girlfriend's position on breastfeeding is this. Try it. If you like it, keep doing it. If you don't like it, you have our permission to quit. The world is filled with women who rank failure to nurse right up there with child abuse. And they love telling you about how they nursed their own children until they were ready to start school. These stories, even to girlfriends who nursed, are boring and judgmental and should not be allowed to make you feel guilty about your decision. Is breastfeeding better than bottle feeding? Sure, I guess so. But then, so is baking your own bread, making spaghetti sauce from fresh tomatoes, and never drinking coffee. The reality is, nursing can be painful at first. It also requires a mother to handle all the feedings by herself, unless she becomes proficient at pumping. As far as I'm concerned, a nursing woman is still a little bit pregnant. Her body is still working for someone else's benefit. Some girlfriends have also mentioned that their husbands have a hard time feeling sexual about them when there is a baby sucking on their favorite playthings. No judgments here, just the facts. So if all these things are true, why do women ever choose to nurse? Well, it is home cooking at its finest for a little baby. It is also simple. Once you've mastered the technique, you open up your shirt, feed the baby, and button back up. No dishes to wash, no ingredients to buy, and it's a lot cheaper than formula. In the middle of the night, middle meaning any time of the day or night after you've had at least an hour and a half of sleep, when your hungry baby cries, one of the last things you will want to do is warm up a bottle of formula. It is much easier just to whip off the breast and doze while the baby suckles to its heart's content. Another great medical benefit from the mother is that nursing helps shrink your uterus back to its normal pear size after it has been stretched to the size of a duffel bag. Now here is one thing you might not know about nursing, but we girlfriends swear it is true. After the sore nipples are healed, and you know what you're doing, nursing feels really, really good. I am talking about good the way sex feels good. When you nurse, a hormone is released in you that has a sedative effect. That slightly drunken feeling, combined with the gentle contraction of your uterus, like after an orgasm, can lead to one deeply satisfied mother. That's why so many nursing women have a goofy smile on their face. Another less glamorous chemical is released that will make you thirstier than if you had eaten ashes. When nursing, or before you lie down to get some sleep, make sure that you have a large, about the size of a bucket, glass of water at your side. My girlfriend Donna used to take a huge glass of ice to bed, so by the next nursing period, the water wouldn't be lukewarm. For me, the best thing about nursing was that it forced me to prioritize my life properly to make room for the new baby. Nursing forced me to neglect the meaningless busyness of my life and pay attention to the baby and me. One of our greatest mistakes as mothers these days is to rush our recovery from pregnancy and childbirth. If it took us 9 months to build up to this condition, we should give ourselves at least that long to get out of it. We are rushing things by having a baby and trying to be back to our former life just 6 weeks later. What if I have to go to the bathroom? This basic function of the human body will provide your first physical crisis since the baby was born, either vaginally or by C-section. The thought of moving your bowels and passing something of substance down that particular passage will make you shudder. This reminds me of a compelling reason to have a vaginal birth, if you have the choice. You can't leave the hospital after a C-section until you have earned your release by showing your nurse a bowel movement of your making. With a vaginal birth, they will release you with little more than a promise to poop sometime in the near future, in the privacy of your own home. You will probably still be sore down there, and certainly not eager to stretch out any of the healing tissues, but poop you must. Some doctors will recommend that you take a stool softener daily, beginning the day your baby is born, to mitigate the discomfort. What they should really prescribe is a tranquilizer, because the anticipation is almost worse than the deed. A couple of days after the baby is born, you will get that unmistakable feeling that your body is getting over its trauma and is ready to move again. If you are a chicken, as I am, you would try to ignore the sensation until you are on the verge of exploding, and then you will tearfully go to the bathroom like Anne Boleyn going to the chopping block. You will be certain that a bowel movement is going to rip your episiotomy stitches and that it will not help your hemorrhoids one little bit. But just as during delivery, there comes a time when you have no option but to push, no matter how faint and sweaty you feel. It is over quickly, and you will survive without any tearing, even if you do bleed a little. Does it hurt? Yep. But I promise it won't hurt like this again, at least not until you have your next baby. Your hemorrhoids may not be too happy, but that's what those little round medicated pads were invented for. What if my guy wants to have sex with me? Let's make a pact among all the girlfriends of the world right now. Even if your doctor tells you at your 6-week checkup that it is all right to start having sex again, you must not tell your partner. All girlfriends must agree to tell them that they may absolutely not have intercourse for 3 months. For heaven's sake, the doctor exam itself will nearly have you hanging from the ceiling. Sexual pleasure at this point is an oxymoron. Why, you may ask, would a healthy, sexy woman not want to make love after the baby is born? Well, here are a few reasons that come quickly to mind. 1. Fear of pain. 2 hemorrhoids and about 5,000 episiotomy stitches can make your labia and vagina feel like ground beef. There is also a certain amount of bruising and swelling in your perineum, the area between your vagina and your anus. 2. You may still be bleeding. For the longest time after the baby is born, you will experience the never-ending period. At first, it is copious and red and rather clotty. Pardon me, but accuracy dictates a certain amount of vulgarity here. With time, it changes to brownish and then yellowish. Depending on your sexual tastes, this may be off-putting to you or your husband. 3. Dry as a bone. A new mother's vagina is so dry that it needs a humidifier. Your hormones will suspend the production of any lubrication whatsoever, especially if you're nursing. It seems obvious to me that the grand plan of nature intended that mothers of little babies not get pregnant again until the first baby was able to survive in the world, so it made us unsexual. Feel free to try this biological explanation on your horny husband. Maybe you will have more success with it than some of my other girlfriends. 4. Not in the mood. Becoming a mother is so physically and emotionally overwhelming that it is quite tempting in the beginning to make an entire universe out of just you and your baby. After a day of having a little person suck on you, burp on you, and otherwise help itself to your body parts, the last thing you may want at the end of the day is to have your amorous spouse to do the same thing. You just don't feel like shaving your legs and putting on sexy lingerie. You want to lie in the bed all by yourself, in sweats, watching sitcoms, and with absolutely no one touching you. Contributing to the lack of interest in sex is the small matter of what you look like for the first couple of months after the baby is born. It will probably be several more weeks before your stomach stops drooping when you roll onto your side and your nipples start scabbing, if you're nursing. And you may be a bit frustrated that you still don't look like you. You know for certain that you wouldn't want to have sex with someone as out of shape as you, and you can't imagine why your husband would either. 5. You are so tired you could cry. Most of my girlfriends agree that this is the single greatest impediment to resuming a normal sex life after the baby is born. If you have time for sex, then you have time for a nap, and the nap will sound far more enticing for the first few months. You will be tired because you are recovering from the ordeal of childbirth. You may be tired because your body is working hard to keep up the milk supply. And mostly you will be tired because you are not sleeping. The fatigue that comes from existing on catnaps and never even having time to dream anymore can make you demented. 6. Fear of drowning your husband. Let me be the first to share with you one of Mother Nature's practical jokes. Sexual stimulation and orgasm can trigger a nursing mother's letdown reflex. This means that, right when things are getting good during sex, you might start squirting milk all over the two of you. Think of the sensation as something like having sex in a car wash. Perhaps you should try keeping your bra on, with extra nursing pads in place, while you ease your way back into the saddle again. Yet another reason to postpone this act. There. Now that the girlfriend's guide has managed to reinforce your dread of having intercourse ever again, let us help you out of this mess. I promise you, you will want to have sex again sometime, and the sooner the better, as far as most husbands are concerned. I have put together a few of my girlfriend's suggestions to break the ice. 1. Get away from the baby for at least an hour before you even think of having sex. You must really break out of the mommy cocoon and get reacquainted with your partner. It may seem impossible for both of you, but do not try to talk about the baby during this preparatory stage. First of all, you will miss the chance to really catch up with each other. And second, thinking of the baby may cause your milk to start leaking out. Now is the time to express to your husband how fragile you are still feeling and how much you would appreciate it if he would take it nice and easy, in spite of his eagerness. Begging, bribes, and threats are completely acceptable at a time like this. 2. Have a glass of wine. I would have suggested this anyway, but now there is even a recent medical study indicating that wine is an aphrodisiac for women. I think most of my girlfriends have known this all along. But even if it weren't the case, wine would be good, because it helps you forget what we are worried about in the first place. It may still hurt a little when you have sex, but if you're tipsy, you won't care as much. 3. Morsing things up down there. It is not enough just to inebriate. You must also lubricate for your first sexual reunion. Several gels are available over the counter for this purpose, so go out and stock up in advance. Otherwise, you will find yourself rummaging through your medicine cabinet and making do with something icky, such as petroleum jelly or baby oil, or worse, using something from the kitchen pantry. A variation on this lubrication idea is to begin the reunion with a massage. I'm sure you could use one at this point, and no husband is going to miss an opportunity like this. He is probably so eager that he would agree to do an oil change on your car first, if you made it a condition of having sex. Don't just use regular old hand lotion. Buy massage oils from a specialty store. My girlfriend Sandra, sly thing, gave me edible massage oils. Think of them as dessert and let your imagination run wild. 4. Don't forget the birth control. Let me join in the chorus of people who should be telling you, you can get pregnant while you are nursing, and you can get pregnant even if you haven't had a period yet. Consider using a condom, especially if you are nursing and can't take the pill, because the lubrication on the condom helps ease things along. I don't think I have a single girlfriend who can honestly say that she had an orgasm during this first postpartum encounter. Well, maybe my girlfriend Melanie did, but she also gave her husband oral sex in the hospital only a few hours after having a C-section, so she doesn't count. In fact, it's a mystery to me why I still like her so much. Anyway, the goal at this time is intimacy and affection, not sexual fireworks. I know it may be hard to imagine ever reclaiming your formal sexual passion, but you will, I promise. The large potato. I have chosen to call the first few months after a mother delivers her baby, or babies, postpartum dementia, because until Brooke Shields and Marie Osmond started talking about postpartum depression, PPD, any free-falling felt by a new mother was usually dismissed as just a case of the baby blues. What a crock of denial that was. I was among the first to stand up and say that my feelings of isolation, fatigue, disconnectedness, and dread were more than the blues or a momentary funk. I mention this to show my own desperation, not to give myself props. I was really in an altered mental state and had no way of seeing it at the time. My husband didn't see it clearly either. And I lied to my obstetrician and pediatrician during my visits. How's it all going? They'd ask. Great! Fabulous! It's the happiest time of our lives. I'd say it with all the sincerity of a droid. In the 12 years since this book first came out, doctors, shrinks, and mommies have become aware that the hormonal tsunami of birth and recovery is frequently strong enough to sink a new mom's ship. We all know that this sense of drowning is code red for us to get to our doctors and get help. If we don't realize yet that we've capsized, it's up to our mates, girlfriends, mothers, or any other aware and loving people to drag us in without our full compliance. If necessary, those around us should call our OB and give her a heads up, because she can find a pretense to beckon us in and surreptitiously get to the heart of the matter. The motivating sign of my girlfriend Lily's possible PPD was that this fashionista wore denim overalls every day, to Christmas parties, to fancy luncheons, everywhere. I think of PPD as a problem that lies in wait for most of us. Some of us are absolutely going to succumb no matter how satisfied and fulfilled and connected we felt during pregnancy. Others of us, like me, and perhaps Brooke, had pregnancies that were vaguely unnatural and had the air of science fiction attached. IVF, hormones, drugs, bed rest, C-sections, and the like all made us feel out of touch and out of control of our pregnancies from the beginning. Then, lack of sleep, a deep-seating feeling of overwhelmingness, and guilt at our lack of gratitude conspired to let us fall prey to PPD. And once we've fallen, it can be nearly impossible to get up again without help. Now, we all know the signs. 1. Feeling resentful or distant from the baby. 2. Worrying that we may harm the baby or ourselves, even without intending to. 3. Hopelessness. 4. Wanting to sleep all the time or having chronic insomnia and jitters. 5. Not eating or bathing or dressing every day. 6. And anything else that makes us unable to rejoin the human race or to find joy in anything once we've given birth. Even my dog's vet knows the signs that suggest that counseling and or medication may be called for. By the way, people always say that the politically correct counseling and or medication, including myself just now, but if truth be told, it's an and, not an or situation. Antidepressants, whether short or long term, are nearly always suggested, if not outright prescribed, and jammed down your throat. This is a biological, physiological, and psychological issue, not an issue of character, personal strength, or ability to love fully. It's a mental health issue, a temporary one, to be dealt with on a medical and an emotional level. 99 times out of 100, mothers with PPD never do a thing to harm or inconvenience their baby, but the wear and tear on the mommies can be immeasurable. It's way past time to consider PPD, whether mild or extreme, a matter of choice or personal control. I'd even go so far as to suggest that almost all of us get it, at least in a mild form. And that to say we're happy and we know it, clap our hands, is like rolling up denial. Just be ready and surrender, Dorothy. You will still be eligible for the Mother of the Year Award, I promise. Chapter 18, The Old Gray Mare, She Ain't What She Used to Be. The truth is simple. Having a baby fundamentally changes your body and your mind, but that is a book unto itself. You can and will lose every pound you gained. You can do sit-ups until you have the control of a belly dancer. And you can kegel your insides until they are strong enough to crack walnuts. But you will never be exactly the same as you were before. I hear some women out there disagreeing with me, and they will soon be sending me pictures of themselves in string bikinis to make their point. Save the postage. I'm not saying that you won't look as good as you did before. In fact, you may look better, but you will not look the same. Girlfriends have told me stories about having curly hair until they had a baby, then watching as their hair went straight as a board. Others have said their skin changed from dry to oily or vice versa. Lots of them complain that their hip bones are never again as narrow as before the baby was born. My personal gripe is my belly button, which is no longer a perfectly round any. But more about the things we cannot change later. First, let's talk about the things we can change now. Losing the weight. We all know the only way to lose weight is to stop eating so much and to start exercising like a fanatic. You're just wasting your valuable time trying to measure fat grams and live on snack wells. So eat well, but in small portions, and exercise every day. What the girlfriend's guide would like to add to the body of wisdom is this. 1. It will take longer than you think. Just to be safe, start thinking in terms of 9 months up, 9 months down. The weight will come off. But since all pregnancy weight is not baby weight, it will come off more slowly than you might wish. The good news about giving birth is that most of your big belly goes away immediately. The bad news is that once it's gone, you will notice all the other places where you got fat, such as your arms, behind, thighs, and face. 2. You will have forgotten what you used to look like. I swear that this is the reason why so many women just stay about 7 pounds heavier than they were before they got pregnant. They simply don't remember how slender they actually were, and they will settle for a reasonable facsimile of their former self. The only foolproof test to see if you have truly lost every pound is to put on your oldest pair of jeans and wear them for a few hours. If they don't give you a wedgie or a muffin top, then you have reclaimed your old figure. 3. You will not get your old figure back until you stop nursing. This flies right in the face of everything nursing advocates will tell you, but the girlfriends and I stand by our statement. Yes, it is true that hundreds of calories are burned every day that you nurse. More than what you would burn on any treadmill or stair climber. So in the beginning of your weight loss experience, nursing will be your friend. When you are down to the last 5 or 10 pounds, however, your old friend turns on you. Nature absolutely refuses to let go of the fat deposits in your upper arms, your thighs, and, of course, your breasts, until you stop nursing. That way, there is little danger of the mother running out of the fuel she needs to keep the milk factory operating. 4. Even when you have lost the pounds, you will have to wait for nature to take her own sweet time about tightening your flabby skin back up and pulling your hips back together again. You know that cereal commercial where they ask you if you can pinch an inch? No matter how thin you get, you will be able to get a good handful around your middle for several months. Or if you had 4 kids, as I have, you can carry that extra skin with you to the grave. 5. Do not get pregnant again until you have lost all the weight from the first baby. There is no capital punishment connected to this law, so don't get panicky if you fail to obey it. But the basic rule is, any extra weight you are carrying when you get pregnant again is yours, and you are no longer entitled to call it baby fat. Of course, we think you can safely use that term for a good 9 months without inaccuracy. The legacy of pregnancy. Now it is time to talk about the physical changes that result from pregnancy that you cannot change, at least not without the help of a good surgeon. 1. Bigger feet. This isn't a universal experience, but it has happened to enough of my girlfriends to make it worth mentioning to you. I don't know if carrying the extra weight of pregnancy flattens your feet or stretches the ligaments in some way, but most of my girlfriends have gone up at least half a shoe size after having a baby. Don't worry. This doesn't seem to happen with each successful pregnancy, so you won't have to change your entire shoe wardrobe every time you have another baby. I'm embarrassed to tell you this for fear of sounding even more frivolous than I actually am, but it may be advisable to weed out your too tight shoes after the baby is born and throw them all away, because your feet will not shrink. From now on your new, larger foot, comfort should prevail over vanity. 2. Smaller breasts. Actually, it's probably more accurate to say thinner breasts, because the skin remains the same size, but a lot of the fat that used to fill it is gone, gone, gone. There is a debate about whether this condition is made worse by nursing, but my observation is that it is the pregnancy more than the nursing that takes the toll. If it is any consolation when you get pregnant again, you will have another 9-10 months of great tits. But the end of the story remains the same. I have only one word of comfort: Wonder Bra. 3. More skin. This may hardly be noticeable to you if you are blessed with great skin tone. If you are freckled, thin-skinned Irish lass as I am, however, the skin on your belly will fold down like a little accordion whenever you bend over at the waist. I suppose, on a dare, I could get away with wearing a 2-piece bathing suit, but I would have to stay standing at attention to pull it off. I swear, you could throw a 10-carat diamond at my feet, and I would not bend over to pick it up, because it would show the world my pleats. 4. Darker nipples. You will have noticed early on in your pregnancy that your nipples got darker and darker. After a year postpartum, your nipples will probably have returned to their former circumference, but they will stay darker for quite some time. 5. Relaxed vagina. Perhaps you should go pour yourself a drink before proceeding with this discussion, because my girlfriends hate this subject almost as much as they hate the subjects of infidelity and menopause. But not talking about it doesn't make it not exist, so here goes. Once you have vaginally delivered a baby, your vagina will never ever be as tight as it was. All of your friends who have had babies, unless they are confident and generous, will tell you that everything down there goes back to its former self, but they are just saying that because it worries them to think that their sexuality has been diminished in some way. The truth is, they are slightly looser, and they are probably even sexier than they were before. Experienced and fulfilled women are always sexier than novices. If you have the nerve to ask your husband if he notices a difference, he will probably do some hedging or outright lying, because he undoubtedly realizes that this is an extremely sensitive topic for women. His future sex life might be completely nuked by too candid an answer. Now, don't panic. You won't be left with a vagina stretched out like some old underwear elastic. You just won't be quite as firm. Your doctor knows this, even if he or she doesn't discuss it with you. This is why most of them are so willing to stitch you up nice and tight after an episiotomy. This is their idea of a consolation prize. Your husband will still want to have sex with you, and you will still enjoy it. As a matter of fact, you may enjoy it more, since your partner might now take a little longer to climax, and that might give you time to catch up with him. If, however, you are not enjoying sex because your vagina feels too flaccid or feels uncomfortable for any reason, see your doctor as soon as possible, because some simple surgical procedures can easily fix this condition. There are even plastic surgeons who devote their practice to repairing this trauma. Gasp! 6. Lazy bladder. Another sensation that lots of girlfriends describe that falls into this looseness category is bladder weakness. There are degrees in this area. For example, thousands of women who have had vaginal births cannot sneeze without wetting their pants. Others say that trampoline jumping and jogging on hard surfaces present challenges their bladder can no longer meet. Then there's a situation where you just can't hold it the way you used to. When you have to go to the bathroom, you have to go sooner rather than later. You may also be unable to sleep an entire night without getting up to go to the bathroom. Look at it this way. This little stroll provides a nice opportunity to check on your sleeping kids and make sure they haven't kicked off their blankets. But before you go rushing off to schedule a C-section in hopes of saving your pelvic floor, let us put things into perspective for you. Many things in life exact a toll, but they are such great experiences that we are willing to pay the price. Top 10 Greatest Concerns of Pregnant Women. 10. Will my breasts stay this big forever? Please, God. 9. Will I feel this sick and tired for the entire 9-10 months? 8. Will my mate ever really understand what I'm going through? 7. Will I poop on the delivery table? 6. How badly will it hurt to deliver the baby? 5. Will it hurt more than a bikini wax? Less than a broken leg? 4. Will I get all ugly and fat? 3. Will everything down there shrink back to normal after the baby is born? 2. Will I be a good mother? 1. Will the baby be okay? Top 10 reasons why you'll do this again someday. 10. Mommy Alzheimer's. You've already forgotten all the worst parts. 9. You spent so much on baby stuff, you need several more babies to justify the expense. 8. It's a good excuse for not losing those last 15 pounds, but not that good. 7. You need another baby to keep all the grandparents from fighting over the one you have. 6. You actually believe that nursing mothers can't get pregnant. 5. You are so tired that you can't remember if you inserted your diaphragm or just considered it a good idea. 4. You want those gigantic titties back. 3. You know what they say about an only child. 2. An addiction of the intoxicating smell found in that fold of skin right where the baby's fat little shoulder meets its neck. 1. Wine. This has been The Girlfriend's Guide to Pregnancy, written by Vicky Lovine, narrated by Laquita James. Copyright 2007 by Vicky Lovine. Production copyright by Vicky Lovine. End.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.